Hey, welcome back to the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Glad to have you joining me as we go up the down staircase in the outdoor, find sense in the senseless, and if at all possible, the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. Glad to have you back one more time, clicking through and finding me on the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm laughing. You may hear that in my voice a little bit because this is the second time that I've done the open for this show. Because the first two times, I didn't take the pause button off the recording. And that is an indicator that I've been working too hard. I spend so much time behind this microphone as the host of The Bridge, which is an international radio show and podcast that I tape 4 days a week. So I tape 7 shows in 4 days. And my co-hosts are in Beijing, China. It is a rotating group of co-hosts. And this project has been going on for about 7-8 months now, somewhere in there. We just passed our 250th episode. And so you'll have to forgive me because I get a little, when I get around this audio stuff, which I've been doing for years, you know, you kind of make a couple mistakes here and there. And I was literally talking for about 40 seconds. And I realized I had not turned on the record button. It was brilliant. Brilliant, I tell you. Anyway, I digress. But this is an unusual show for me, not in the fact that I'm doing it, but in the fact that most of the time when I do podcasts, it's in the evening. And this is very early on a Saturday morning. And my voice is not where it is usually at by, you know, late in the afternoon. I'm used to a certain tone and tenor and schedule when it comes to doing this stuff. And so most of my mornings are production work. So usually at this time of the day, as the sun is coming up and illuminating my vaunted Aurora Media production studio, I'm doing production work. I'm listening to shows I've already taped that literally the world gets to listen to, which is just still mind-bending to me because of the technology. But usually I'm pretty quiet right now. I'm just drinking some coffee. I'm watching Fed the Birds. I got the squirrels doing their thing. As I said, the sun is coming up, and I got all the plants that are going to eventually go out in the yard, the tomatoes, and I got some sunflowers that are getting ready here and some little tubes that I'm growing inside to keep them warm until things get nicer outside. But anyway, so this is unusual in the fact that I'm doing it now. But I've been wanting to talk about something for 3 days, and I had to find the time to get it in. And first of all, if you're a subscriber to this podcast, thank you. You know, this business, and podcasting is a business for me because it's part of what I've done for many years on radio and still do on radio, but there's a business model here, and people who subscribe to this podcast, they're just you know, superheroes to me. It's not a big deal in the large scheme of things, but it matters to me that every month somebody decides they're going to stick with this and plunk down $20, which is roughly the cost of a pizza here in Chicago. A small or medium costs you about $12, but a nice large pizza down the street here at Rocky's about $20. And they support what I'm doing. And that means a lot to me. It's like the books that I write. You know, when somebody buys one of the books, whether it's Phenomenon, Living an Uncommon Life, or Every Moment Matters, they're supporting the efforts that I've had over the years. And that's it's hard to put that into words sometimes, you know. And so some people send me checks every month, and some people make their direct deposit every month. And I never know when they're going to listen, or even if they're going to listen, but they do it anyway. So for all of you who are subscribers to this podcast that keep this going, in the fact that every time you remunerate with $20, I just deeply appreciate that. It's something that I don't always acknowledge, and I wanted to do that first and foremost today. And for the rest of you, you're living off their dime. If you haven't done that, then maybe you might consider it. Anyway, I've been working out since I was 15 years old. I saw Pumping Iron in 1975. It was the movie. It was first a book, and then it became a movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Lou Ferrigno, and all these bodybuilding guys. And I was just a 15-year-old kid that was in, for me, in the right place at the right time. And it all really stems from my maternal grandfather, Carl Gustav Bengtsson, who came from Sweden when he was 19 years old with very little in his pocket, like many people did back then. And he was a boxer when he was younger. And he was a guy who was very innovative. And he actually built some of his own exercise equipment, some of which my son has to this day. I've already used it, passed it on to him. He has it in his garage. And so this stuff was laying around in our basement. And my grandfather passed when I was 7. So, you know, I have memories of him, but we certainly didn't work out together. But later on, this movie came after I read the book by Charles Gaines, Pumping Iron. And I started using my grandfather's equipment in the basement. And there was like the X machine, you know, you squeeze the thing together, like the bull worker, you squeeze it and hold it and squeeze it and hold it. And there was a few hand weights laying around and stuff like that. And, you know, when you're 15 years old, at least for me, body's just starting to grow. And I'm going into high school. And actually, by 1975, I would have been, you know, my sophomore year of high school. And, but it all clicked for me, meaning that whatever that was all about, and it wasn't certainly not bodybuilding. It was something about pushing against an immovable object with some force, which was like a machine. I felt like a machine most of the time. And of course, I had Superman energy back when you're 15. You're basically bulletproof and you know, you got all the energy in the world. And I can clearly remember, you know, eating scads of food and going down to the basement after dinner and working out for 2 hours straight and just, you know, and I just did that over and over and over again. And my body responded very quickly. But over time, I started to see bodybuilding, working out, lifting weights, pumping iron, pushing the iron as more of a discipline, and that I was a disciple of the effort, not so much the results. I mean, I was never going for, gosh, I got to look a certain way. This was all like an internal thing for me, like pushing against something very heavy and growing stronger from it was, I can't explain it. It's like this, it's like a fortifying experience for me. So how I looked over time was only the result of all that pushing and pulling on heavy objects. And I was lucky enough to have the genetics that they like equaled out. Very strong when I was younger and moved a lot of weight and all that kind of stuff. And matter of fact, in 1983, I ended up in a bodybuilding contest by mistake, basically. I was in the Coast Guard at the time, and one of the guys I was stationed with at an air station, he entered a bodybuilding contest, so I became his partner. And we worked out together. This guy was a little bit over the top, but he probably got about 6 weeks away from the event itself, and he decided he wasn't going to do it. And that just ripped me up. I said, listen, I have been working out like this, you know, so you could quit. So I decided I was going to do it. And I grew up in Chicago, and there's two big high school rivalries. There's Schurz and there's Lane. And Schurz High School at the time, I don't know what it's like now, was the second largest high school in the city, and Lane was the biggest. And back then it was all boys school in the early years. But then eventually they opened it up to co-ed activity. But Lane Tech and Schurz would just go head-to-head all the time. So the odd part was, when I played football in high school, they were our biggest rival. And then it turns out that this bodybuilding event was held in Lane Tech's auditorium, which was like the unkindest cut of all. But I went there and did it. And I actually did pretty well for a guy who really didn't know what he was doing. But I had the genetics, and I was able to mush my way through it. And there is nothing so humbling as standing in front of about 1,000 people on a stage, especially the Lane Tech stage, in basically, you know, underwear. And I am not a, my skin, let's put it this way, being Swedish, Norwegian, and German, I am not a ruddy complexion person. And this was in February of 1983, as I recall. And, the people that were there said, you look great, but we couldn't see it because when the lights went on, you just faded into the background. So I came in first in the tall class, and I came in like fourth overall, and I did that. But again, it was all a byproduct, the pushing and the pulling and the constant movement. And so at the age of 62, which I am now, I think about all the decades that I have been pushing on immovable objects that seem to be immovable. Of course, they move, the weights move, but they've, you know, at different times in my life, very, very heavy weights. And I was able to build up to that. At one time, somewhere there's a picture of me at 235 pounds, which is, never mind how many pounds ago, what's called doing a negative, which is where I simply would take the weight off the rack as a bench press and then lower it, and somebody helps me pull it up. But I was able to get up to 605 pounds with a couple of negatives. And the idea with that, it's a lot of weight. The idea with that is that what you're holding against and resisting so much weight is really obviously making the muscle stronger. Well, that's the theory, at least. And, you know, so all of that being said, the amount of weight I moved, and I think of the tons and the places I've been to work out and the people I was with, and it all really came down to that pushing thing. And I never really figured out why until about a week ago. And this is what's been on my mind, what I wanted to share here on the podcast, is that if I go back to college, maybe I should go back to college, but when I did go back to college after I was in the service, I took a class on kinesiology. And kinesiology is basically the study of human movement. And it was a natural for me. You know, I was taking other science courses, but I was, because I'd worked out so much, I was enamored with the mechanics of how the body machine does what it does. And my instructor was Professor Betty White. God rest her soul. Not that Betty White, because she's still alive, but our professor was Dr. Betty White. And she was just a trip and a half, and tough as nails, and cut no corners, and all that kind of stuff. And I just had an epiphany in her class on the day we talked about the SAID principle, S-A-I-D. And the SAID principle is one of the most important basic concepts in sports science. It's an acronym which stands for Specific Adaptation to Imposed Demands. So that means when the body is placed under different forms of stress, like being on a bench with 605 pounds, it starts to make adaptations that allow the body to get better at withstanding specific forms of stress in the future. Really important to remember that. So everything I was doing, let's say, on a Tuesday with that much weight, it was making me stronger to do things in the future as well, because it was literally breaking down the muscles to get them stronger. In weight training, that's what happens. You're breaking down your muscles and they come back stronger. So this adaption process, it doesn't occur like in one mechanism. It's just the general overall tendency of your body, which is played out in innumerable separate mechanisms, because everything's connected. So here's the thing. And this is what came to me last week. And I've mentioned some of this over the years, but it really coagulated and got solid for me last week. I was in the gym, and I went later in the day than I usually do. Usually I work on the production in the morning. I bug out for about an hour. I go to the gym. I do about a 45-minute workout. I don't need to be in there 2 hours anymore. I got nothing to prove. And I'm out. And this day I was off. I went in a little bit later in the morning. A whole different crowd in there, a whole different energy. And I slipped back into less of a maintenance workout, which is mostly what I do, because again, you know, I'm not going to any bodybuilding contests anytime soon. But it was more like it's all about stretching now and flexibility and having as least amount of pain as possible. When I was young, that pain, that tightness, that was like the signs of, you know, you're really getting somewhere. I've done all that. So now it's a different deal. But this particular day, I can't tell you what clicked in, except that I felt not quite 15, maybe 30, 25, 30 years old, still pretty strong, still pretty, you know, much put together. And my body is 62 years old. So, but something clicked, and I got in there and I had a workout like you couldn't believe. Now, listen, that doesn't mean it didn't hurt later in the day, but for that 45 minutes, it was like it was 1985 all over again, you know, out of high school, out of college, you know, but still in the kind of shape that was respectable for me, and that I could move these weights and do the things I wanted to do. And I sat down when I was done, and I was almost out of breath, And I don't know what came over me. And it was just, okay, so okay, I went in a little bit later and maybe that might have been it. And, you know, I couldn't quite pinpoint it. And then I started thinking about the SAID principle. The adaptation part of this is a very specific thing. So, like, how do I explain this if you can't see? If you're a tennis player, you'll have larger bones on the arm that you serve with, literally, because over time they get stronger and thicker than the arm you don't serve with. It's like a right-handed, left-handed thing. So what happens is, whether it's tendons, ligaments, it doesn't matter, muscles for sure, any kind of resistance makes something grow. And, you know, lower repetitions with a very heavy weight creates a density, and a lighter weight over time with more repetitions creates more elasticity. And so all this stuff is about stress. And it's not the, I'll get to the other kind of stress in a minute, but this is about stressing the body machine specifically. So how is it possible that I went and I lifted, I have not pushed over 300 pounds on a bench press in years. Again, didn't think I needed to anymore. No problem. It just up and down they went, and I, it was just astonishing. So there's a thing called muscle memory, and everybody has it. Some memories are better than others. And all I can figure is the adaptation to the demand that was being placed on me. My body remembered how to do this at a level, at a weight level that has not been there for years. And I didn't plan on when I went in. This is just how it all worked out. And I sat down, as I mentioned afterwards, fascinated by how this all came together. And this specific adaptation to pose demand thing all of a sudden expanded exponentially to me. Because I started to realize and confirm over and over again that this is something I learned in kinesiology, which is the study of human movement. However, we move through the world on a lot of levels, not just physically, but spiritually, emotionally, mentally, no question. And what about the adaptation on those levels? It's the same principle. It's just a different application. And I started to look at my life in a little bit different way about how is it that on, you know, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically is kind of a given for me, but spiritually, mentally, and emotionally, have I been able to adapt to the stressors that life has placed on me? What was my response to that? What was my specific adaptation to the imposed demand? And then it got really, really interesting. By the time I got back to my office and I started writing down notes, and I don't do that much anymore. I just, you know, listen, when you write books and you write books for other people, sometimes the last thing you want to do is read or write. And that's why the audio stuff comes to me as easily as it does. But I sat down and took some notes and remember this time and remember how this was. And pretty soon there was a pattern there. And I started looking at the things that had happened to me that I never planned. The one that came to mind first that I took the notes on, and I've written about this quite a few times, was when I was 19 years old and I got electrocuted working at the Osco drugstore at Montrose and Pulaski, right off Montrose and Pulaski, back in 1979. And I did not plan on getting electrocuted. My plan was in a very different direction, but it was late at night and the store was closing and there was something wrong with the machine that we used to smash the boxes. And I pushed a button that they had told me worked, but really didn't. And I got electrocuted. I was done. I'm not here anymore. My heart stopped. I have no activity. I clearly remember the before. I don't have a whole lot of remembrance after in the next day or two, but I do recall, once this incident, which I thought was an accident at the time, but it wasn't, it was an incident, big difference, waking up in the pharmacist, a guy named Mike, who had been in Vietnam years before as a medic, just happened to be there and knew what to do to get my heart going again. And, you know, they got me to the hospital and I had these third degree burns on my hand. And it wasn't so much the physical part that was the challenge. It was the emotional and the mental and the spiritual part that was being challenged. What are the weights in that? How much can you endure under those stressors? So as I sat here taking notes the other day, thinking about that time, I was 19 years old. The world is my oyster, so to speak. And while physically I am convinced because of working out for 4 or 5 years at that point, that's what saved me physically. Like I was big enough and healthy enough and strong enough to endure this electric shock that the doctors said if any of the young women that were working there, if they had done the same thing, they would have never been able to pull themselves off that machine. They wouldn't have the strength. They would have not survived. So I felt on some level like, well, I didn't exactly enjoy this happening to me. I'm glad it didn't happen to one of them. And so then the machine was fixed after that, go figure. But rolling back to these other levels, spiritual, mental, and emotional, every one of those were tested for me in a way that I'd never had been tested before. It was all physical for me. You go downstairs, you lift the weights, you just keep slapping it, bam, 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 bam. Now here I was, unable to do that. And I had to sit with myself. And now I was being tested. How much weight can you endure on a physical, mental, and spiritual an emotional level? The physical part was my hand. The doctors were taking care of that. And this electricity had gone through my body. And to this day, I have these white marks everywhere where the electricity found its route. So that's the physical. We kind of put that off to the side. But emotionally and mentally and spiritually, I was a wreck because I didn't know what was going on. And so that was the first big event in my life that I realized that I was being asked or invited or had the opportunity to have a specific demand imposed on me and respond to it. But it's the same principle, if you're following me, as kinesiology, just in a different application. So I had a list. I still put this on paper. I sat for about a half hour, drank coffee, and made a list of the events in my life that I never invited in. You know, when I went to the gym, I went to the gym. I was going with a purpose. I started looking at the events in my life that I didn't know were going to happen, or some that I thought might happen and happened anyway, and they were far more difficult than I thought they might be. And I realized that every one of those events was an invitation to get stronger. That no matter what was happening, my power was in the response, was in the adaptation to the demand imposed on me. Car accidents and relationships and business failures and the successes too bring their own stressors. So for 3 days, this has been in my mind to talk about this. And then I got the bigger picture. Look what we've just gone through with this pandemic, and some places of the world are still going through it. Specific adaptation to imposed demand. What kind of grade do we give ourselves as a species after this last 18 months? Not real good. What, maybe a C minus, D plus? I don't know how you even measure that or gauge that. But all of a sudden, the same thing applied there. How do you respond to the demand? Some people put masks on, did social distancing, and washed their hands. No big deal to them. Other people, same stressor, same situation, not going to wash my hands, not going to wear any mask, you can't tell me what to do, and he goes in that direction. And I think part of this came out of my thought when I saw the news story that Ted Nugent, the rocker, who mocked, you know, the COVID stuff for a year, got COVID and thought he was going to die, and then retracted his statements about COVID, that he thought it was a fake and a hoax and all that kind of stuff. And then he got so sick, he said, I thought I was going to die. How I came back, I'm not really sure. Maybe that's a karmic thing in there somewhere too. But when I see stuff like that, I say, then what's your response? So this is his response now. So my point in all of this little bit of a rant on a beautiful Saturday morning is that it's so important to keep that in mind, that 99.9% of what happens to us, we really don't have any control over. It comes from the outside to the inside. And that's where our resources are, on the inside, not on the outside. But most of us, quite frankly, until we're tested, don't know what we have inside. We don't know what resources we have, what tools we have, because we've never had to use them. So for me, from an early age, you know, getting electrocuted at 19, gone, they bring me back. 27 years old, I'm in a car accident just a few weeks after I got married and gone, and they brought me back. You know, you get two of those, you start to effing pay attention, at least at some point. And so all this time, I realized that the metaphor for me has been going and doing resistance training. I'm resisting something. And resistance makes you stronger. It breaks you down. So when you push at it again, you're able to handle more weight. And I don't know that we often see that, the gift that is buried in the difficulties that are presented to us. And if we're going to, at least for me, this is how I see it. I've had to take this stance because otherwise I'm a victim. I don't want to be a victim of anything, right? So there's no power in that. Then there's just whining and complaining. Oh, look what's going on. That's just victim stuff to me. When you start to see things as a lesson, or that this is an opportunity in here, and it's not a liability, it's an opportunity, then your mind changes. Then you're starting to look in different directions, and you're looking for different responses to the demand imposed on you. One of the things that is part of that equation is stress, that you're stressing the muscles, you're pushing against it, you're stressing them so they break down and grow back stronger. And it can by the way, before I continue, you can start resistance training any time in your life, and it's still of benefit. I've been lucky enough and diligent enough and disciplined enough to stay with it basically for the most part since I was 15 years old. So for me, when I go in the gym, I'm feeling like at 62, I feel like I'm 52. You can start at 52 and still get benefit. You could start at 62 and still get benefit. So this isn't something you have to do for a very long time. Your body will respond to the demand that you place on it, whatever that might be. If you want to sit on the couch, eat double stuffed Oreos, and watch Jerry Springer reruns, that's what you get. If you want to go to the gym and push on some weights and do some resisting and stretching, then your body changes that way. But also remember that on another level, that unseen level, emotionally and mentally and spiritually, you're also getting stronger by the other things in your life. And that's where this other concept of stress comes in. There's stress just being alive. The stress level that I have at 62 is different than I had at 52, 42, 32, and 22. As the world has changed and more information comes to me that I can't possibly do anything about, I've had to get filters and push stuff away, because if I just took it all on, I'd be so stressed out to what's going on over here and what's going on over there, and can't do it. So you learned, at least I have had learned, to have filters to keep the stuff out that doesn't belong inside me. And it becomes a muscle in itself. So stress in life is a given. How you respond to the stress in life is not a given. It's a choice. And choices and chances equal outcome. So I'm really working to keep these podcasts to about 30 minutes, and I'm getting close to that now. But what I wanted to just get out there today is that no matter what's going on in the world, your world, the world, either one, the power in this lies in your ability to respond to it. And your ability to respond to it is simply based on how you specifically adapt to the demand imposed. So if it's a medical thing, a relationship thing, a career thing, it doesn't matter what the thing is. What matters is how do you respond to it? How do you build yourself through that? That's all that matters. Because when you do that, then all of a sudden opportunities and options show up that would have not made themselves known had you just gone the other route of, oh, this happened to me again, or look what's going on. And, you know, that becomes a muscle too. It's part of human nature, I think, to complain and think about things that should be different and do nothing about them except talk about it. But I've grown over time to really get out of that and instead put my back into something that I find valuable. Then I don't have time to worry about complaining and bitching and moaning about stuff that I can't do anything about anyway. So in conclusion here, in this little workout we've had together, I go back to my Professor Betty White at Northeastern Illinois University back in 1987, 88. And I think of the one thing that I pulled out of that. I got an A in kinesiology, by the way. It was great. but that one, you know, there's just some pivotal things. And this is a pivotal thing for me. And when it came back to me so many years later, last week when I was working out, that concept of specific adaptation imposed demands, that it's not just about your physical body. It's how do you respond spiritually and mentally and emotionally? How do you build those muscles up? You know, one of my favorite places to work out has always been the YMCA. And I'm a huge fan. when I was a kid, once I stopped working out in the basement, I'd go to the Irving Park YMCA. I'd walk up there and got a, you know, the Y card. And the weight room down there was used by the Chicago Bears for many years. And there's all their pictures down there and stuff. It's quite an incentive for a young guy to go down there and hit the weights. And so I remember vividly spending hours down there. It was the dungeon, you know. And over time, wherever I've traveled with my business, I would always try to seek out a YMCA to work out. And the reason for that is there's a couple. Number one is it's no frills. I don't really care about all that stuff. I see these, you know, monolithic health clubs going up, and I suppose there's a place for that stuff. But for me, my needs are pretty simple. I just want to go and push the weights and do things. And the second part of it is because of the mind, body, spirit mantra that they have at the YMCA, that you're out of balance if all you do is work out. If all you do is pump iron and work out, but you don't build the spiritual muscle and, you know, the mind as well, then you're out of balance. And it took me a while to figure that out. So the YMCA, again, I'm not being paid to endorse them. I just think has always been a reminder for me that, you know, mental, spiritual, and emotional should be in balance. And that for all the years that I went in and pushed those weights and pumped iron and moved that tons of weight, my physical body was getting really, really, really strong in the gym. But in life, that's where the spiritual and the mental pieces had to get strong. But the same principle and application applies from the physical to the mental to the spiritual. It's just, it crossed the board. And while this may be not much of a revelation for anybody listening, it's an ongoing reminder to me that it's all about the basics. And, you know, if you always do what you've always done, you will always get what you've always got. And you don't like what you're getting, then you ought to do something else. That's the bottom line. So thanks for listening. I appreciate all of you who subscribe. And remember, specific adaptation to imposed demand is really what it's all about. And how you respond to the demand placed on you is more important than the demand itself. Until next time, safe travels. Adios.